prajesha.
Aham
bhavayagya ime prajesha. Dakshadaye bhavad adasya cha. Dakshadhayoye bhavad adayascha. Svaloka pala khagaloka pala. Svaloka pala khagaloka pala. Niloka pala stalo nirloka pala stala loka pala. Niloka pala stala loka pala. Kandharva vijayatara charanesha. Yayaksha rakshura ganaganata. Yevarshinam shabhat pitrinam. Daitendra siddheshvara dhanivendraha. Anya chaye prita pisacha bhuta. Kusmandaya dramiga paksha adisa. Yatkincha loke bhagavan mahasvad. Oja sahasva balavakshamavad. Shri Vibhutyatma Varad Bhuttarnam Tadvam Param Rupavaras Farupam. Ambhavoyagai me prajesha. Dakshadayo ye bhavad adayascha. Saloka pala khagaloka pala.
Do the word for
Translation. I'll go a little bit quick. Aham, myself, Brahmaji. Myself, Brahmaji. Bhavaha, Lord Shiva. Yajna, Lord Vishnu. Ime, all these. Praja Isha, the follower of the living beings. Daksha Adaya, Daksha Marichi Manu, etc. Ye, those. Bhavat, yourself. Adayacha, and the bachelors. Sanat Kumar and his brothers. Swalokapala, the leaders of the heavenly planets. Kagalokapalaha, the leaders of space travelers. Nilokapala, the leaders of mankind. Talalokapala, the leaders of the lower planets. Kandarva, the residents of Gandharva Loka. Vidyadhara, the residents of the Vidyadhara planets. Charana Isha, the leaders of the Charanas. Ye, as also others. Yaksha, the leaders of the Yakshas. Raksha, demons. Uraga, snakes. Naganataha, the leaders of Nagaloka, below the earth. Ye, others. Ba, also. Rishinam, of the sages. Rishabha, the chief. Prithinam, of the forefathers. Daitya Indra, leaders of the atheists. Siddha Ishvara, leaders of the Siddha Loka planets. Spacemen. Danava Indra, leaders of the non-Aryans. Anye, besides them. Cha, also. Ye, those. Preta, dead bodies. Pishacha, evil spirits. Bhuta, sorry, Bhutajin Kashmanda, a special type of evil spirit. Yadaha, aquatics. Mirga, animals. Pakshi Adisa, giant eagles. Yat, anything. Kimcha, and everything. Loke, in the world. Bhagavat, possessed of Bhaga, or extraordinary power. Mahasvat, of a special degree. Ojasahasvat, specific mental and sensual dexterity. Balavat, possessed of strength. Shamavat, possessed of forgiveness. Shri, beauty. Hri, ashamed of impious acts. Vibhuti, riches. Atmavat, possessed of intelligence. Adbhuta, wonderful. Arnam, race. Tatvam, specific truth. Param, transcendental. Rupavat, as if the form of. Ashvarupam, not the form of the Lord. Translation. I myself, Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, great generators of living beings like Daksha and Prajapati, yourselves, Narada and the Kumaras, heavenly demigods like Indra and Chandra, the leaders of Bhurloka planets, the leaders of the earthly planets, the leaders of the lower planets, the leaders of the Gandhara planets, the leaders of the Vidyadhara planets, the leaders of the Charnaloka planets, the leaders of the Yakshas, Rakshas, and Uragas, the great sages, the great demons, the great atheists, and the great spacemen, as well as the dead bodies, evil spirits, Satans, Jinn Kushmandas, great aquatics, great beasts, and great birds, etc. In other words, anything and everything which is exceptionally possessed of power, opulence, mental and perceptual dexterity, strength, forgiveness, beauty, modesty, opulence, and breeding, whether in form or formless, may appear to be the specific truth and the form of the Lord, but actually they are not so. They are only a fragment of the transcendental potency of the Lord. Purport. Those in the list given below, beginning from the name Brahmaji, the first living creature within the universe, down to Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, Narada, and other powerful demigods, men, supermen, sages, rishis, and other lower creatures of extraordinary strength and opulence, including the dead bodies, satans, evil spirits, jinn, aquatics, birds, and beasts, may appear to be the Supreme Lord, but factually none of them is the Supreme Lord. Every one of them possesses only a fragment of the great potencies of the Supreme Lord. The less intelligent man is surprised to see the wonderful actions of material phenomena, as aborigines are fearful of a great thunderbolt, a great and gigantic banyan tree, or a great lofty mountain in the jungle. For such undeveloped human beings, merely the sight display of the Lord's potency is captivating. A still more advanced person is captivated by the powers of the demigods and goddesses. Therefore, those who are simply astonished by the powers of anything in the creation of the Lord, without any factual information of the Lord himself, are known as Shaktas, or worshippers of great powers. The modern scientist is also captivated by the wonderful actions and reactions of natural phenomena, and therefore is also a Shakta. These lower grade persons gradually rise to become Sauryas, worshippers of the sun god, or Ganapatyas, worshippers of the mass of people as Janata Janardhan or Daridra Narayan, etc., in the form of Ganapati, and then rise to the platform of worshipman Lord Shiva in search for the ever-existing soul, and then to the stage of worshipping Lord Vishnu, the super soul, etc., without any information of Govinda, Lord Krishna, who is the original Lord Vishnu. In other ways, some are worshippers of race, nationality, birds, beasts, evil spirits, satans, etc. The general worship of Shani Dev, the lord of distressful condition, and Sitala Devi, the goddess of smallpox, is also common to the mass of people. And there are many foolish men who worship the mass of people or the poor class of men. So different persons, societies, and communities, etc., worship some of the potent manifestations of the Lord, wrongly accepting the powerful object as God. But in this verse, it is advised by Brahmaji that none of them is the Supreme Lord. They are only borrowed plumes from the original Almighty Lord Sri Krishna. When the Lord advises in Bhagavad Gita to worship Him alone, it is to be understood that worshipping Lord Krishna includes worshipping all that is mentioned, because He, Lord Krishna, includes everyone. When the Lord is described as formless in the Vedic literatures, it is to be understood that all these forms mentioned above within the experience of universal knowledge are different exhibitions of the Lord's transcendental potencies, and none of them factually represent the transcendental form of the Lord. But when the Lord actually descends on the earth or anywhere within the universe, the less intelligent class of men also mistake Him to be one of them, and thus they imagine the transcendence to be formless or impersonal. Factually, the Lord is not formless, nor does He belong to any of the multiforms experienced within the universal forms. One should try to know the truth about the Lord by following the instruction of Brahmaji. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Sriyam Vipakadam Yandiradi Shaparantikam Vancha Kalpa Turibhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Hare Krishna, please forgive me, I'm just filling in, I don't know for who. So, this is a rather on-the-spot presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, I will try my best to convey a message. So, Purusha Shukta Confirmed is the title of the chapter. And basically here, this is the second last verse. We're about to conclude this chapter, of course, explaining this, the potency of Krishna. and what differentiates Krishna from all his other different shaktis or all his other different energies. So in this purport, many types of living entities have been mentioned with different strengths, with different duties, etc. And in the previous purports, Srila Prabhupada has been quoting a lot in terms of differentiating between Krishna's personal energies, differentiating between Krishna's external energy, Krishna's empowered living entities, how they are sometimes misunderstood to be the absolute truth, as we hear from this verse. So earlier on we were hearing how the Lord's potencies are immeasurable, and they have been confirmed in various texts, different Upanishads, etc. So we know the verse from the Upanishads, Prasya Shakti Viradeva Shrute Svabhaviki Jana Bala Kriya Cha, that the Lord is the greatest of all, and even the greatest of all living entities, the first created beings, is a servant of that Supreme Lord, the Lord Krishna. He is the original Lord Vishnu, so to speak. We can explain it like that. He is the source of the different Vishnu expansions who expand into the universes, into the atoms, into the hearts of the living entities. So this, the Supreme Lord Krishna, he is the fountainhead, or he's the foundation of all these different expansions. So Lord Brahma here, we're hearing his guidance as he is one of the great authorities, especially since he gave us the Brahma Samhita. So he's establishing that there is no one actually above Lord Krishna, that he is the fountainhead of all different energies. He is the giver and maintainer of all living entities. He's the chief amongst all eternal living beings. So therefore it is important that we know the position of Krishna, so that we do not mistake any other empowered living entity to be the absolute truth. When we do not have any knowledge, we are covered over by the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance. And we become bewildered, not knowing what is what or who is who. Whether we are a philosopher, an anthropologist, whether we are a demigod worshipper, whether we are whatever we may be in this world, if we do not have knowledge about the supremacy of Krishna and how he is nirguna, how he is above the modes of material nature, it is difficult for us with our material senses to try to understand his position just by mental speculation. So knowledge is very, very important. What you speak, we're hearing from Lord Brahma, the most intelligent living being, the first created being. He himself is explaining how they are very inferior or insignificant in comparison to the Supreme Lord. So the bewilderment that the living entity experiences in this world, of course, is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Trivi gunamayi bhavi eva sarvam idam jagat, that every entity beginning from Lord Brahma down to the insignificant ant, I am bewildered by the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance. Therefore, in order for this bewildered living entities to actually come out of a bewildered state, we have to attach ourselves to a pure, to an untangled and uncontaminated energy that can make us understand, that can make us see clearly what reality is. So there's different coverings, of course, of living entities. Bhagavad Gita explains, you know, fire that is covered by smoke, dust covering a mirror, and the embryo covered by the womb. So there's different degrees that the living entity, the conditioned souls, are covered by ignorance, passion and goodness. So in order to climb out of this dense covering, we need knowledge that will dissipate this ignorance, whether it's in its manifest or unmanifested state. We need the aid of the Supreme Lord to actually dissipate this darkness. So Lord Brahma here, since we're coming from his line, he is providing to us knowledge that will dissipate the darkness and help us understand the position of Lord Krishna in creation. So, we'll just get to the purport. So Lord Brahma explains how himself, all the different leaders from the lower planets up to the higher planets, whether it's Narada and the four Kumaras, the leaders of the Naga, the snake planets, etc., they themselves appear to be masters or controllers because they have some kind of potency. Including, you know, Prabhupada is mentioned here, Lord Brahma is speaking also about evil spirits, yakshas, great beasts. They have some potency in them, either to inflict or impose fear, bewilderment, to give elation, some type of material happiness. They have some potency within them, beauty, some type of knowledge. Nevertheless, we should understand these potencies are just a fragment, a little inkling as to the magnanimous potencies of the Supreme Lord. So everything that all these different entities that have been listed, everything that they have is actually coming from the transcendental potency of the Lord. Nothing is ever independent of Krishna. We're always in every state of being, whether we're Lord Brahma or an insignificant ant, we're actually very, very dependent on the Lord. We're never independent. So all the potencies that all species of life may have, moving or non-moving, this purport is explaining that actually these potencies are coming from the Supreme Lord himself. That living entity is never single-handedly independent. The living entity is never the proprietor or the enjoyer of any of the actions or any of the benedictions. That everything is actually coming as a quality of Krishna, and it manifests in different ways. Now, the next point Srila Prabhupada mentions here is that less intelligent men are surprised to see the wonderful actions of material phenomena. So some people like to worship ghosts and spirits or snake holes. They worship the forefathers, they worship scientists, they worship atheists, etc. due to their, of course Prabhupada mentions, due to their lack of intelligence because they cannot discriminate. He uses here an example of how the aborigines, they become fearful by hearing or seeing a great thunderbolt or a gigantic banyan tree. They're thinking this is the most supreme, the most majestic thing in creation because they are so limited in their scope. Or anyone who worships a banana tree or a banyan tree or anything, they are thinking this is the most absolute thing in creation. This is what my heart should be worshipping. This is what my mind and my intelligence should be going towards. It is captivating for them. But of course, we understand that this is just a little fraction of Krishna's potency. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is mentioning that the material and the spiritual energy, they are all coming from him, and they're just but a fragment of his multifarious potencies. What we see in material creation is an insignificant aspect of the full potency of Krishna's energies. So material creation is wonderful for those who are very much less intelligent, whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion. So for them, everything becomes very external. They try to find the absolute truth in material amenities, in material resources. But this is all due to a lack of intelligence, a lack of knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada mentions that this captivating potency of the material energy is something that is very bewildering for these less intelligent living entities. And we can see that ourselves, some of us who just came to Krishna consciousness not so long ago, the material energy and its potency looks and sounds very captivating. It looks like a lot of variety, lots of taste and flavor. Just by the mere sight of it or the sound of it, it looks very, very captivating. But after a few times of trying to enjoy that captivating energy, we understand that it is very short-lived. It doesn't really fully satisfy the real self, which is spirit. Non-material self cannot be satisfied by material acquisition. It is not possible. But the material energy gives glimmers and hopes of enjoyment in its variety, in variety and in its ability to create hope that one day, yes, I will enjoy this resource, or I will enjoy my material body or my mind, etc. So this energy of the Lord, His potencies are very, very captivating. What you speak of the external energy that is captivating, Krishna's internal pleasure potency is extremely captivating, and that is why Krishna descends to the material world to perform His leela, so that we become captivated by His transcendental pastimes. All aspects of Krishna are captivating. His external energy and His internal energy, they are captivating. That is why the conditioned souls are stuck in material existence, because the energy is so overwhelming that the only way once again to get out of this daivi dham is to approach Krishna once again. He explains that his energy is very, very insurmountable and difficult to overcome. It is very, very difficult. The only way to stop this captivation by the external energy is to approach Krishna's internal energy. We have to go towards that which is sat and move away from that which is asat, which is temporary. Because the temporary pleasure will not please the eternal spiritual being. So as I mentioned, there's different gradations of this captivating nature. As I mentioned, the example from Bhagavad Gita, how our ignorance is covered by different degrees. The dust covering the mirror, the smoke and the fire, or the embryo in the womb. So some people are very, very grossly ignorant, not accepting any supremacy or authority, claiming themselves to be atheists, etc. Some claim themselves to understand that the absolute truth is impersonal, while others, those who see themselves as still more advanced, they worship the devatas, those that have been mentioned here. There are different subgroups of demigods who get their powers ultimately from Krishna. So they are also limited in their scope, in their capacity, and they can never give liberation. Just as each time any of Lord Shiva's worshippers approach him, or the great demons like Hiranyakashipu, who wanted to become immortal, Lord Brahma had to explain to him, I cannot give that. Even the demigods are limited in what they can provide to even those who worship them with great awe and reverence. So even the great demons like Hiranyakashipu, they cannot get the ultimate benefit in life by being one in terms of becoming a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they do not direct him, they do not approach him directly, but indirectly through the demigods. And therefore they do not get the complete shelter or the complete care coming from the Supreme Lord. They become captivated by the powers that the demigods can give, whether it's living for trillions and trillions of years or possessing powers to control elements like earth, wind, water, fire, different elements some demigods can control. So they become captivated by these benefits they get from the demigods. However, this is still insufficient. It is still insignificant in relation to what one achieves when they connect themselves with the original person, with the Adi Purush, Purushottama Krishna. When one moves away from being a Shakta worshipper or worshipping those who provide great powers, one can be blessed to come in contact with Lord Vishnu, specifically Govinda, Lord Krishna. One then starts getting information about Govinda, who Krishna is, and his relationship to this universe. So this is what Lord Brahma has been explaining, at least in this purport, in this verse where he's mentioning the topmost devatas, the rishis, those who are inhabitants of the higher planetary systems and even the lower planetary systems, how by their worship of the great powers, the external powers, is insufficient for them to actually approach an eternal life of bliss. It is insufficient for them to become elevated to the stage of being reunited in their Satchit Ananda form, unless they actually come into contact with information about Govinda or Krishna. So, towards the second last paragraph of the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that these lower grade persons gradually rise to become worshippers of the sun god, worshippers of Ganapati, and then gradually rise to the platform of worshipping Lord Shiva, and then to the stage of worshipping Lord Vishnu, the Super Soul, etc. So, when they do like this without any information of Govinda, their endeavors are very, very fruitless. There's not much scope for making further advancement. So included in Prabhupada's analysis of those who are enamored by the great powers of material existence, Srila Prabhupada gives example of modern scientists. He gives examples of those who worship different persons, societies, communities, etc. And they see these powerful objects as God. They see these powerful people as God. And they worship them in different ways, not necessarily by performing an arti with incense and tilak and offering flowers and petals and abhishek. Not necessarily like that, but they become so engulfed in thoughts of their so-called gods. So if we think in the West, if we think of Hollywood, that is what is happening. The movie stars and the sports stars, they are worshipped like God. Wherever they go, there's constant meditation about what they're doing, what they're wearing, and what they're eating. Right? We have, you know, Krishna's Astakarya pastimes, where we know, okay, between the hours of 6:48 and 9:45, Krishna is doing this. And then different times of the day, Krishna is doing certain things. Krishna likes to eat certain foodstuffs. Krishna ties his clothes like this. Krishna wears this on his head. Krishna plays the flute like this. He has different types of flutes, etc. So in the Western civilization, this is done to our sports stars and to our movie actors and actresses. There's channels dedicated. They do not necessarily have a Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. They have channels on TV. They have websites dedicated to them and their prowess, their beauty, their fame, their material knowledge, what they like to eat, what time they wake up, how many times they take shower, etc. So all this worship is going on in modern civilization. This is how they perform their worship, because they're enamored by these so-called empowered persons in life. So I don't know, in India, I guess it's the cricketers and the Bollywood stars, right? So everything Sachin Tendulkar has done, you'll find a group of people who have a fan page, a fan club, And they can tell you everything about this person. They can tell you everything about, I don't know these people's names. Who is out there these days? Who's a famous actor in India? Amitabh Bachchan. Okay, he's like, you know, centuries old. There's like Kareena Kapoor. Is there such a person? Okay, there's Kareena Kapoor and Shahrukh Khan. Everyone knows that one. So you have all these type of persons, and they're literally worshipped because they have some kind of fame, they have some kind of shri, some kind of beauty, some kind of opulence is there, some kind of aishwarya is there. So mistakenly, they are being put on a pedestal, and they are worshipped greatly. Every single step of their life is watched like a hawk.
Do you admire?
Not even admired. Some people don't even admire them. They're just so, they just fall in love. They don't know them. They just hear, oh, this is a famous person. I'm going to go hear them sing. I don't know who they are, but I'm going to go anyway. This is how our intelligence gets lost into illusion. We accept great powers, great material potencies to be the all in all. And we think this is the way of life. My life is successful. I'm going to watch the tennis, the Australian Open final, right? Because my favorite player is whoever is in the final. I don't know who it is. And this is Roger Federer and I don't know, Nadal? Do you know? Okay, whoever, whatever. Yeah, something like that. So the point I'm trying to make is that Lord Krishna is misunderstood. In Kali Yuga, religion is seen as irreligion and irreligion is seen as religion. So people do not know what real dharma is. People do not know what the position of Lord Krishna is. Therefore, you have entire volumes of books written down by great sages, written down by Srila Vyasadeva, where he's trying to outline the real truth in essence without having to beat around the bush, without having to make a mockery or try to get a fan club or try to get favoritism, etc. Just presenting the truth that actually the absolute person, the one who's the chief amongst all eternal living entities, the proprietor, the maintainer, the enjoyer of all the yajnas that should be performed is none other than Lord Krishna, Govinda. And all these different energies that we see floating around, the external energy, the Tathasta energy, all these different energies are just potencies coming from Him. Why not worship the owner of all these potencies? So knowledge means that we understand the different energies, we understand the jiva, we understand the external energy, we also understand who's the controller of both. Right? If we understand the external energy is coming from Krishna, the marginal potency is also coming from Krishna, and who is this Krishna? He's the master, he's the proprietor. So why not worship him then? Why worship an empowered living entity who is claiming to be God, instead of being intelligent and going to the root cause of everything? So Lord Brahma, the first created being, this should give an impression to our subtle bodies, the most intelligent, the first created living entity himself has written beautiful Brahma Samhita, in which the first affirmation he makes is that there's only one Ishvara. There's only one supreme Ishvara. There can be little Ishvaras here and there. You have Lord Indra, who is, you know, the Lord of the heavenly planets. You have the fire god, the wind god. You have little Ishvaras here and there. But who is the supreme one? Krishna. So that is the first affirmation that Lord Brahma makes. And for the entire soliloquy he gives of Brahma Samhita, He ends off each text by saying, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Without a doubt, he's making it very, very clear that Govinda is the supreme original person. He's the one who never can get affected by the external energy. He always appears as he is in his original transcendental form. So Lord Brahma here is offering all these different prayers to make a point that whether the Lord is in the spiritual world or he's in the material world, he descends on earth as he is in his original transcendental form. He does not take on a material body. He is not formless. Some persons read the word nirguna, which means without qualities, and then they say, yes, this means God is formless. But nirguna means without material qualities. So yes, Krishna is nirguna because he has no material qualities. He's all spirit. He doesn't belong to any multiforms experienced within the universal forms. He has his original form, Swayam Bhagavan, in Goloka Vrindavan. And all these other potencies and all these other shaktis are but a means to try to reclaim the fallen souls. So all the Leela avatars that we have, the Purusha avatars, the Manvantaras, the Shaktivis avatars, Guna avatars, all the avatars that we may have are meant to bring the conditioned souls to this point of understanding who Govinda is and what our connection to him is. So the Lord advises in Bhagavad Gita to worship him alone. So that's also a very obvious point Prabhupada makes in this purport towards the end. That Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he's saying, just worship me, Krishna. Not worship me as in I, the unborn within. This is what some translations are saying. But Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita is directly saying, worship me. Now, me denotes a person. Me is not impersonal. When we say me, we refer, there's a person behind that personality. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that we should try to know the truth about the Supreme Personality of Godhead by following the instructions of Brahmaji. So this chapter has been Lord Brahma explaining the different shaktis or potencies of Krishna, explaining the different Vishnus in relationship to Krishna, how they manifest, why they manifest, where they get their potencies from, and for what reason, what pastimes do they perform in this universe. So when we understand that, when we understand and put them in their proper place, then we can easily appreciate Krishna's position. But if we do not know how these different potencies of Krishna are working, how his Purusha or Leela avatars or Guna avatars are functioning, we will think that there is no difference. There's no difference between Krishna, there's no difference between Mahamaya, there's no difference between Durga or Krishna, they're all the same. Because we do not understand that they all have a different part to play in the universal creation. But if we understand them single-handedly, how they are put there by the agency of Krishna, how they're getting all their shaktis, all their strength, they're getting everything from Krishna, then we understand Krishna is actually supreme. But if we do not link all these different energies and shaktis, whether they're material or spiritual, if we do not link them back to Krishna, we can't understand Krishna as supreme. We will equate Krishna with all these different energies and think it's all the same. It's the same person. So it is important for us to understand the supremacy of Krishna, how everything is emanating from him, and how Krishna is the thread that keeps everything together. material and spiritual. All these potencies are coming from Krishna, and without Krishna, nothing has value. This is another point Bhagavatam is making, that without the presence of Krishna in this material world, nothing has value. Because Krishna in his form of, in his three Vishnu forms, enters into the different universes, injects life, enters into the different atoms, and enters into the heart of every living entity to give guidance. So without these three Vishnus, what is there? Nothing would actually have potency. Krishna injects potency. So in this way we get to understand how even just Krishna's material creation is so wonderful. It is so, so wonderful that Krishna is just by his glancing or by his desire, things are going into action. He doesn't have to work hard. What to speak of how Krishna's personal expansions work, how Krishna's pleasure potency functions. So when we understand all these different energies and put them into perspective, then we will not become captivated by material potency. We will understand that there's something even much greater, and that is Krishna's own internal pleasure potency. So we have to put all these different understandings of Krishna's shaktis, Krishna's potencies, into the proper perspective, whether it's coming from Lord Brahma, the four Kumaras, the potencies the Rakshasas have, the potencies the Nagaloka, the potencies great beasts have, etc. We have to put them into perspective and understand that the Shakti to perform any action, to possess any beauty, any knowledge, it is coming from the blessing of Krishna. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he gives knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So everything indeed, material and spiritual, is emanating from the lotus feet of Krishna. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. Oh, okay.
Does Krishna have one flute or does he have more than one flute?
He has more than one flute. According to my memory, Krishna has four types of flutes. So they all have different pitches and notes. So I know there is Bamsi, there is Venu, Murli, I forget the last one. Yeah, because I can't remember the last one. So he has different flutes and he plays them at different times because they send out a different message to all the residents of Vrindavan. So when he plays Murli, you know, at a certain evening time, you know, that's before the Rasa Lila, he plays a certain flute. So yeah, he has more than one and he keeps it in his belt. Fancy. Pretty Lakshana. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the question is, Brahma Samhita is explaining how Lord Vishnu and Shiva is like milk and yogurt. So of course, I often find any example of Lord Shiva is very confusing because Lord Shiva is a category of his own. So he's not a jiva, nor is he a supreme personality of Godhead. So he's in between. So the example that Lord Brahma gives, that, and he's making that, it's a very, very subtle distinction that milk, if you add a certain substance to it, it curdles and is transformed into yogurt. But you can't transform yogurt into milk, right? So they eternally remain separate. But at the same time, the realization I get from that example is that both of them are very elevated. However, one is superior to the other. So Vishnu Tattva is very different. Shiva Tattva is also very different, and Lord Shiva can take his followers to lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So Lord Shiva is a very, very exalted personality, but he is not the supreme personality of Godhead. He is just a special transformed, because there's nothing like yogurt. It is a special transformation for a particular reason. Very, very special transformation. So in that case, we respect the position, not necessarily that we worship Lord Shiva, but he himself explains that he will not honor any remnants apart from the remnants of Lord Vishnu. And he does not, he chants the names of Lord Ram. In bona fide pictures of Lord Shiva, you will see him, he has his mala and he's repeating Ram, Ram. He's chanting the names of Lord Ram. So he knows what the absolute truth is. And sometimes he performs pastimes that are very, very tricky. Like when he, you know, Lord Shiva knows the potency of Lord Vishnu, so he asks the Supreme Lord in the 8th canto to show him Mohini Murti as a way to glorify the Lord, that you can bewilder everyone, including me, the great Lord Shiva. So the position of Lord Shiva is a very, very special one, but at the same time it distinguishes between what is original and what is a transformation. So origin is Vishnu, Lord Shiva is a transformation. Any question, comment? Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki.